and action. Use plus player one.
Oh, is it? I gotta say that?
Yes.
Public service announcement. If you're using opinions or other opinions.
Fuck that bullshit. They are my opinions. And my guests. No one else's. Remember, this show ain't for chitlins' ears. So listening discretion and viewing discretion is advised. This is a paranormal horror crime show. So the scenes and the sounds can be a little terrifying to those little ears and those little eyeballs. And of course, there's obviously cussing. I mean, it's me. This is for entertainment purposes and for you guys to listen with your ears. Consume the knowledge. And now, time for the show. What's up, Paraeeps? Welcome back to part two of Leanna Renee Heber talking about her new book. And some little rascally ghosts out there. But before we start part two of Leanna Renee Heber, I need you guys to hear me out. Just wanted to let you guys know that this weekend, Saturday, June 24th, catch me live with my other geekster, Debbie, and the Amok crew, Adrian and his lovely wife, Tina, from RVPRI, Pam and her friend, Jess, from Border Town Paranormal, and Ken from Monster Paranormal LLC. Join us as we investigate the Ray County Museum in Missouri this Saturday, June 24th at 7 p.m. Central. You can catch us on kick.com/geeksparanormal, twitch.com/geeksparanormal, or the Amok Paranormal YouTube channel this Saturday, June 24th at 7 p.m. Central. Hope to see ya. And thank you for listening. Now on to Leanna Renee Heber. Ooh.
With spirits who are messing with me. Like, you know, and that particular story didn't make it in the book because it's demonstrably not about women. It's demonstrably about rascal boys, rascal boy ghosts. So if we have time, I can go into that, but I don't want to derail us.
We'll be here as long as you can be here. Well, maybe not 4 hours later, but you know.
Well, I will. So if y'all want to hear a story of rascally boy ghosts, I can tell you that story. But
awesome. Well, you'll tell it. And after this question, though, because somebody in the chat has a question and wants to know, Woodwalker Dawn asks, has she ever tried auto writing? Now, I know the answer to this one because you told me, but
I don't do that within a haunted space necessarily, but I consider that all of my fiction, all of my writing is in fact automatic writing. Because I go into a zone, a real zone, and I just kind of let myself give over. And so I try not to think too much about how I'm making it happen, because the minute you start really overthinking of it, the minute that channel completely shuts down. Mm-hmm. But for me, when I'm really deep in my writing, I really do feel like I am tapping into something the spirits want me to say. And generally speaking, that'll be like sort of over an overarching topic that might want to come, you know, to come out in my work. In my Spectral City series, I'm very honest in that series that my heroine, Eve Whitby, is it's very much me. She's driven to like represent the spirit world and sort of be an intercessor between the living and the dead and sort of listen to spirits and help them. And then they help her solve crimes in New York. Now, I don't go to that level or length about it. I don't have a paranormal investigation office in the city, but I am interested in that kind of reconciling the stories between the living and the dead. And I really am devoted to the spirit world in how I sort of live my life, and how the stories I want to tell are stories I feel that I am being kind of urged and encouraged to tell. And so, you know, several years back, I kind of gave like control of my career. I was like, all right, spirit world, I'm doing this for your, like, may we be a force for good. I'm gonna be here on your behalf and see how this goes. And I've, you know, thankfully been able to stay published, which is, it's a tough, you know, it's a tough business. You have to, you know, and that's something, the inner workings of that is very much full of mortal failings, not, you know, it's a tough business. But so every time I sit down to work on projects, I really try to kind of open myself up in that particular capacity. So it really does feel like mediumship when I'm doing work, when I'm really, in the zone. It's when I'm muscling it too much, when I feel like it's me trying to grapple onto the narrative or force it one way or another, that's when it's not working. So yeah. I always have to get into that space that people talk about in that automatic writing field, where it is that openness. And then you have to kind of see where you're at on the flip side. Then I have to do a little editing, of course.
He said, yes, it seems the minute you add you to the writing, it does get contaminated in a way. And now I'm gonna have to ask you about that later, Dawn, because you're leading to something on that, dude. And I talk to you all the time, so that's gonna, okay, yeah. So Leanna, go ahead and talk to us about the Rascally Boys.
Oh my god, okay. So I worked for several years at a haunted cave in St. Paul, Minnesota. So back in the days of Prohibition, St. Paul, Minnesota was like Sin City. Hard to believe that quiet little St. Paul, Minnesota was like the nasty town. And I love the Twin Cities. I lived out there for almost 6 years, and it's a great town. And I moved out there because I was working in theater. And so in between my rehearsals and my projects, my side job was giving ghost tours through this haunted 1930s speakeasy that had been put into a cave. So it originally in the 19th century had been a mushroom growing cave. And then in the 1930s, it was used for bootlegging, where they would have the whiskeys and the stills and the vodka stills and everything in the back. And then there was like a party room and a ballroom where they'd put within the cave, they put in paneling a wooden dance floor and a beautiful like facade around. Wow. And there was a fireplace at the back that did have an exhaust chute. And so there's a fireplace, beautiful setting, and there were bullet holes grazing the fireplace. And so there were grazing marks and actual bullet holes in the fireplace. So it being a speakeasy, it being a Prohibition hub, there was obviously gang and mafia and presences there within that. And so at some point there clearly was violence, and it's thought that there were possibly bodies buried in the very backs of the caves. Obviously this is not something that would have been easily tracked because all of this was kept very much under the rug, and the mayor of St. Paul at the time just let the bootleggers have free reign of the city. So there wasn't, the police did not go after anybody for any of the things that occurred. That was all like within the bosses and their various, you know, underworld elements as it, you know, that was left to fall where it may. So we didn't have any confirmations, but we knew that there was a lot of haunted activity within this particular space, because we would talk, we would give tours, and we would walk people around the space. We would lead them through the ballroom, through the bar area, and into the back caves that were at this point used for storage for the company, because it was still, in our modern era, it's still used as a event venue. It's a you know, you can rent it out for parties and things.
Oh, cool.
So it's still an extant thing. But we would lead the tours in the off hours during the day. And then we would have easels that had big boards that were historic photographs that we would set up. And invariably, so when we were giving tours, it would just be one person walking around and talking to people about the history of the caves and the history of St. Paul at the time, because we were right off of the Mississippi River. So there's just so much really interesting history to talk about. But inevitably, as we would go around, one of the lights that we'd turned on would be off, or one of the lights that we'd turned off was on. Usually one of the pictures that we had set right side up would be on its side or actually on the floor. And there were no breezes back there. And so, you know, there would always be something a little bit amiss. And every time, and I'm honestly sure that that our attendees just thought that we set it up that way. But no, we really didn't. We were trying to be very straightforward about it and then just share some of the stories that we'd heard through the years. One of my favorite ones is a clairaudient haunting of hearing 1930s jazz echoing through the halls when there wasn't even a speaker system hooked up at that point.
Oh,
so
that's
pretty cool.
Wow.
That's a cool one. But so my particular story, so I was leading a corporate client through, and so it was a private tour, and it was this group of people that worked at a nearby office building, and this was just something they were doing as like a team building exercise or something, I don't know, but they handed me a $50 bill at the end as a tip. And so I mentioned I was working in theater. Like, this was, you know, small theater companies I was working with. I was right out of school, so I was a starving artist, and so that $50 was like, that was my food for the next like several weeks, you know? And so I was like real excited, and I just was thankful to the guests. I led them out, and I was starting to lock up and pack up. And so I tucked this $50 bill in the back of my pants pocket, and I buttoned the back of my pants pocket. And then I went and I closed everything up. I put all of the pictures away. I turned off all the lights, and then I went to gather my things and put that $50 in my wallet. Well, it wasn't in my pocket anymore.
Oh.
And so I retraced all of my steps. I turned all the lights back on. I went through everywhere I was going to, everywhere I'd been. And nothing was there. And I just didn't know what else to do but to yell at the ghosts, because they always like to just kind of mess with stuff. And so I said, boys, I am corporeal and I need that to eat. That is $50. I know you understand money. I do. And I know you understand how much that is to me right now. And so you don't need to eat. I need to eat. I need that $50 back. And so I took one more round and walking through, and I, shit you not, there was my $50 laying spread out below the bullet holes in front of the fireplace.
Oh my God. Chills. I just got chills. That is awesome.
And I was like, how did you even do that? I was the only person there. So y'all are just going to have to take my word for it, because I have no corroborating witnesses other than my own panic of losing $50. But like, I had buttoned that. Anyway, little slippery incorporeal fingers.
No kidding. That's a that was a professional thief right there.
Yeah, literal pickpocket. Pickpocket. And so I didn't know what else to do but yell at him. And there it was after I yelled at him.
So that's,
so when I say that you sometimes have to draw the line with spirits and just I come by that naturally from my own personal experience. I'm sure that they thought that was hilarious.
Oh my God, yes.
Let's let the little lady panic.
Let her panic a little bit. Let's watch her. It's going to be hilarious.
I mean, you know, I'm glad I could provide them some entertainment. Lord knows I got a good story out of it, and I did get my money back. So I guess it's all worth it, really, at the end of the day.
Definitely.
Sometimes the playfulness ends up working out.
Yep.
It's one of these things where I think, you know, it's when you have energies that that thrive on those interactions. I mean, I don't know. I feel like there is if in some of these cases, they end up kind of becoming extended members of the family.
Oh, they do. They do. Like this little boy, if we ever move, I hope he follows. I really do.
Yeah.
I really do.
Well, I think you can invite him along. You know?
Yeah. I would. I totally would. And he knows. He knows if I go anywhere, he's more than welcome to go because he's just so funny. Every now and then I'll hear a whistle and it's like, there's nobody here. What do you want?
I love that. See, I feel like one of the things that I wanted to make clear in a lot of my chapters in the book is that ghost stories don't have to be scary. And I think the industry goes into the Halloween spooky jump scare aspect of ghost stories like too often. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but yes, there is an element of startle and shock. Like Eve Whitby in my Spectral City series, she deals with ghosts for a living as I do. And she says something, I basically gave her a line that I've used myself, which is ghosts are creatures of startle and shock. Because they will appear when you are not expecting them. Inevitably, you are going to be startled. But by their nature, they do not necessarily have to be scary. I think what we have to be mindful of as people in the paranormal is respect that the fear of ghosts comes from people's fear of death. And the fear of ghosts comes from the fear of the unknown. And that is completely natural fear.
Yep.
And that is something that I can embrace and understand and be empathetic with. Yep. Trying to manufacture that fear, trying to sort of make ghosts out to be terrifying or violent when they're not. Now, if you're dealing with a really, really negative energy in a house, that's another story. Then you want to enlist a professional to come in and cleanse some stuff. That is beyond my purview and my pay grade. So I'm not the person to just call for that. But whatever your faith
religion
structure
faith,
is or lack thereof, and someone you believe understands boundaries, then you can call them in to deal with a particularly negative energy. And I feel like people know when it's like cross the line from playful into something that's actually more malevolent. But I don't think that we need to just jump right into the terror of it. I don't feel like that every ghost story has to be that. For me, I'm actually really drawn to what can this person tell us about how to celebrate our life right now?
Right. Exactly. I like that. It's kind of like my saying, spreading the light on the paranormal.
Yeah,
it's not just about, spreading the light and making sure everybody knows that it exists. It's about the funny stuff that happens.
Right. Well, and also too, just like the concept of like, of light, of like energy, of like inner light, of like, the fact that there's a spark. There's a spark that keeps these spirits.
Sorry, one moment. Thank you for the follow.
Oh, yeah, you did. I love it.
Spiritual Rodent, thank you. Like the name.
That's awesome. I love that.
Okay,
especially considering that I talk about New York City a lot, so that just feels like very on point.
Woodwalker Dawn said that Leon Gleckman is a name that you should probably, if you don't know about when you were doing that tour guide.
I do know that name. I'm trying to remember how I know that name. So yeah, I'll follow up on that. Thank you.
He said the biggest bootlegger from the area.
Yep. Yep. So. Oh, yes, absolutely. From St. Paul. Absolutely.
Yeah, from St. Paul.
I knew I had come across that. Absolutely. Yeah, he was in the script. it's been a little while since I've given that tour. And it wasn't relevant for our recent book because of it, focusing on women.
On women, yep.
But it's a great one when we talk about playful spirits.
How has your experience being a tour guide? Like, how long have you been a tour guide, a ghost tour guide?
So I moved to New York City in 2005, and now I split my time between Central New York and also I still go to the city for work a lot. So I'm kind of bouncing all around New York State at present. But I started working as a tour guide in about between 2006 and 2007 because when I got to New York, I knew I wanted to see about still working in theater. I knew I wanted to be a writer, and I knew that New York City was a hub of both theater and writing and publishing. The publishing industry is, centralized out of New York City still. And so when I moved there, I was like, well, I'm going to need side jobs. What do I want to do? I knew I wanted to write books set in New York City. So I had been my side job in every other state that I had lived in had been being a tour guide. So I was like, well, I'm going to go back to what I know and I had experience in. So that's where I applied for a local tour company. And I had to then study to get my license, because in New York City, you have to have a license to be a tour guide. And that is wise, because New Yorkers like to talk out of their butt about stuff. And so you better actually test them about their knowledge, because they will just confidently point to the Chrysler Building and say, that's the Empire State Building. So yeah, no, you got to test.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, no, the New Yorkers will just tell you a bold-faced lie. So, I mean, you know, and the concept that New Yorkers are rude is like, that's false. New Yorkers are direct, forthcoming, and sometimes playful. But the idea of New Yorkers being mean, no, they're only going to be mean if you're mean.
Right.
And they also have places to be. So if you're in their way, they're going to go around you. And maybe like, so if you're a real slow tourist, come on now, we got places to be.
Oh, that'll be me. So, the real slow tourist.
So you'll just be buffeted by the New Yorkers around you. So just don't be offended. It's just, you know, everybody's late. But so I started studying in 2006. So I got my license and then worked on those red double-decker buses for years.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
It was a rough job because the audiences really were using the buses more like transportation. They didn't really care about me waxing rhapsodic about how much I love Central Park for like 20 minutes in traffic. You know, but I really love Central Park. So, you know, it's the stuff that I was really geeking out about, those audiences were just, they were just trying to get to Macy's, you know, and that's, so I just realized that was not the best fit for me. The best fit for me was going to be doing walking tours. Mm-hmm. So that's when I shifted into working for Burrows of the Dead, because I was like, all right, well, I want to do tours where people are focused on my favorite things. And so I was like, all right, history and ghosts. So that just seemed like the natural fit. Plus I'm goth and this is how I want to dress.
Exactly.
I had to wear a white polo shirt when I worked on the red double decker buses, and I was allergic to it.
Yeah.
Not because it was the fabric, I just was allergic to
the white
polo.
Oh, so I understand.
Personally, I was just like, no, this is me and my natural habitat. So, I was like, wait a minute, how can I be a goth, my goth self as my job full time? Exactly. Okay, ghost tour guide. There we go. So this has been one long
completely.
Career trajectory to try to justify my wardrobe, basically. So.
Gosh, I hated having to wear like red or white or anything aside from black.
Yep.
Anywhere. And I mean, every now and then you'll catch me in a different color. It's because I just got home from work or something like that.
Exactly.
But
yeah, no, I understand.
Woodwalker Don said, as a tour guide, has your group ever all picked up on something that you did not?
They'll, generally speaking, the group will go where I've led them energetically. Like, so they'll generally be on the same page as me, for the most part. Especially around the places, if I get real emotional, then they'll get real emotional. Especially around the Triangle Fire. Mm-hmm. Cause I can't talk about that without tearing up and choking up. And I don't ever want to lose that raw. I want my guests to feel as raw as I do about it, because I feel like that's the way to honor that, the misery that happened there. We can honor that with being raw with them.
Yeah.
But there was a time when there was one person who kind of had this sort of unpleasant smirking energy at me the whole kind of time, and was like this one person who was like a little bit of like a fly in the soup during it, and just kind of liked to sort of play devil's advocate, as it were, in cases, and I rolled with it. But like by the time that we got to 14 West 10th Street, the place with the real, real nasty energy, that smile got a little weird looking, and the inability, that person taking that sort of playful energy of discounting what I was saying got a little darker in that space. And so it was like the darker energy was almost affecting that person who was trying to kind of like get under my skin. And I remember at some point they said, you know, it's just fine. And then I recalled the fact that like one of the seances that had been called in that house, there was this woman who, like, this woman appeared, and she was in gray with a gray cat, and she said that everything's just fine. And clearly it is not fine in that house. It is not fine in that house. And so it didn't occur to me. And I mentioned that I end the chapter that I write about this with that sort of, everything's just fine. It's not, the house lies. And so this person echoing that, everything's just fine about that house, it didn't hit me until later that they were like echoing almost the what the house wants you to think kind of thing. And then I was just like, oh, ah. So I take everybody, like, I will let people. So that's actually the final stop on one of our tours, is at that place. And because the energy there and the stories there are so tragic, and the energy there is just blah. I take everyone across the street to the side of an Episcopal church, to the, like, holy ground, because it's like, I was like, just humor me, you know, I don't whatever your belief is, like, I don't just, but this is holy ground, and I just want you to, it's a different energy than is over there. And so that's all I'm doing, is like, this is not me doing a faith-based thing, this is me doing just a reset thing. I was like, just shake it off, and I'll just have people shake off the energy. I was like, just humor me. and I don't care if people think that I am, like, totally woo and wackadoo about
right.
it. They're gonna feel like they got the more authentic experience of, like, okay, so this total, like, psychic woo wackadoo lady told us to shake off bad energy. Like, well, but I stand by it,
right?
Personally, because I also just, you know, people have asked me of, like, do you worry about attachments or things following you or whatever? No, because I shake it all off at the end of the tour. So, no, like, yes, I have thought about that. And so I try to do my due diligence and shake it off.
And shake it off, yep. Because that would have been one that would have been like, oh, wait, what?
So that moment, that was the one time where I was like, there was something that was at odds with what I was with what I was saying and doing, and it was something that was, like, almost deliberately trying to get under my skin. But for the most part, I mean, not everybody's as tuned in or is as passionate about stuff as I am. Sometimes people just get tired of walking, and they'll be like, this was really great, but we gotta go. And, you know, and they'll and as long as people tell me that they're leaving the tour, then that's fine. They can, I'm not holding anybody hostage for 2 hours. You know, if they have other places to be, then they have other places to be,
right?
But that was the one particular moment where I was like, that's that we are not on the same page.
Yeah.
But I think, like, I just try to really roll with things as best I can. I mean, you're on the streets of New York City, and anything can happen.
That's
true. I've had to just roll with, you know, talkbacks from random people passing by or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And so we don't actually do tours on Halloween itself, because that's when people get real rambunctious. Yeah. Actually, you know, other times around it, it's not been a thing. But, like, on actual Halloween itself, we're like, no, we don't give a tour. Celebrate in your own time and your own
right.
way.
So. Oh, understandable. Fluffy Bubble 420 says, "Does she have a favorite spot to talk to these ghosts?"
I don't necessarily have a favorite spot, because I feel like I want to be open where they are. If it's a sight-based spirit, then I need to go to where they are.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And in terms of if I'm just opening myself up to the spirit world in general when I'm writing, I have a couple little spaces in my home where they're kind of like my little nests. This is one of them, my little nests, where I've got some crystals and I've got some stuff and I've got my favorite books and the things that are inspirational to me, the stuff that has a lot of my energy in it, but also too, that's, you know, a space where I feel like I can be ready to create, because it's a very much a partnership. It's like, yes, I may be getting input, but I'm the one who has to craft it. And I very often will have to make changes, because a story needs, you know, conflict and resolution. And if I'm writing for a particular genre or particular publisher specifications, I'm going to need to do certain things to meet those needs and expectations. So in terms of spots, like, there are spots that I will go to in my travels that I feel are particularly spiritually resonant. I will say that about upstate New York in general. The upstate New York was known in the 19th century as the burned over district because, and I say this with quotes because it was a quote, and the concept of the burned over district was that in the 19th century, it was a time when from about the 1840s through the early 20th century, where the fires of the Holy Spirit were scorching the land. That's where that burned over district phrase comes from, because we get so many different offshoots of religion happening from upstate New York, from spiritualism to Seventh-day Adventism to Mormonism to Reformed Judaism is happening in the crux of New York at that time too. We have all Gardnerian witchcraft and the Wiccan movement. You've got people who are bringing in Eastern religions within the Theosophical Society. You've got all of these different, like, explosion of different ways in which to think about and talk about faith. And that was happening in upstate New York, along with the suffrage movement in Seneca Falls, New York. So you've got really interesting, like, social justice and also, like, women's rights, and you also have people forming utopian communities all throughout, like, small towns around the east, just the eastern seaboard. And the utopian communities were trying to think, like, okay, well, how can we've got this industrial revolution happening, and some of it's great and some of it's difficult. How can we reimagine a possibly better society or a perfect society? And some of those things were cultish, and some of those things were just more like a friends on a commune. They very much ranged. And you've got in the early 19th century, you've got the Shakers, who were an offshoot of the Quakers, and they were very spiritualist in a lot of their discussions of things. And that was founded by a woman, Mother Ann Lee. She would call herself the reincarnate Christ in female form. She was a really interesting lady. And and so she was, you know, doing a lot of talks about, like, what a new world could be, and had, you know, a group of followers around her. The Shakers diminished. Celibacy was part of their worldview, and so it was also a part of their diminishing in terms of not having replenished generations still carrying on the Shaker traditions. There are still a few Shakers in the world, but there was an offshoot of Quakerism that was also getting a big start in upstate New York. So that spread from there. So it's really interesting for me in terms of, like, the spots and the spaces to be aware of where there was, like, spiritual synergy happening in all kinds of different directions. So for me, one of the reasons why I do spend a lot of time in upstate New York is that I just feel very spiritually replenished out in central New York and upstate New York, because it's just very there's just a lot of lively energy, and it's also really beautiful. So, like, you've got gorgeous glens and waterfalls and dramatic landscapes and things. And there's something about that land that just really sings to me. So it's like, I mean, I was born in rural Ohio, and I will always love Ohio, but New York just sings to my soul, and it always has. And so I knew that when I moved out to New York City, and also spending time in other parts of New York, that I can never leave this state. It's just it's got, you know, that's where I feel most connected to the spirit world, is in New York State. So hopefully that answers your question.
Well, another question to add on to that, Dawn is asking, is there any warding that gets done to protect the space of yours?
Warding. Oh yeah. Warding is always a good idea. So for those who might not be familiar, warding just basically means a boundary that you've set, like a magical boundary that you've set for yourself. And for me, warding can happen in a number of ways. And I think for anyone who's going to do warding for their own space, I think, you know, I do like talismans. So I like all, whether it's crystals, whether it's really special things like heirlooms, things like that, stuff that's been in my family, things that I find a personal amount of strength, any icon that means strength to you. Sometimes, you know, I have different interfaith symbols. So I have symbols of all kinds of different faiths that are around my house, that, cause I think that there's a lot of value in all kinds of different faith systems. But that's my personal, you know, view. But I think whatever works for you, of like, what do you feel what means protection to you? What means something that's safe and that's you and that's your boundary? And this goes back to the boundary that I was talking about with setting with spirits, of like, hey, these are the boundaries. So, you know, a lot of people will talk about warding around thresholds, so mm-hmm. Windows and doors, other spaces where energy can come and go. And I think, you know, that being mindful of that is really great. And then just kind of having a sense of like making sure that your energy, it's not just here, it's also out here. So I'll sometimes also do a little bit of psychic shielding, especially when I'm talking about big, deep, dark and difficult stuff, especially right. in some of the history that goes into some dark places, about just thinking about pulling down energy that I think is positive and making sure that that's radiating out from me. And a little bit of it's a porous shield. You have to kind of keep doing that throughout the course of your day, just to kind of keep that, like, because, you know, other difficult things, whether it's you know, just negative energy in and of itself, will find ways through, just like you have to just kind of be wary of how much of a person you let into your life. If that person is either bringing you down or is negative or is toxic or any of those kinds of things, we have to do those kind of boundaries with people too.
Yeah.
We have to do the same thing with just energies in general. So I think that's something that everyone can relate to, but I'm always hesitant to talk about warding in any specific way because it's very personal. It's whatever brings you strength, whatever replenishes you, whatever gives you a sense of feeling like you're in control of your space, that is what your warding is. And there's all kinds of different literature on what that is, but I also just don't ever want to tell people, oh, this is the way you have to do it, because I think it's just so fundamentally personal.
Yeah. And he's also asking about the corners or directions that you place your wards. Is there any specific corners or
every
directions?
Direction.
Every direction.
All the directions. Yeah, I like to have everything covered. I like to have little sacred things at every spot, because I don't have a good sense of direction.
Me neither.
So I feel like I need all my bases covered. So, but in terms of like, there is a lot of beautiful faith-based, especially in Native American tradition, about the four corners. And that's definitely something that has like ancient and beautifully powerful truth to it. But I also, I'm one of those folks who I don't feel like any one direction is more worthy than another. I feel like they're all, you know, they're all important in their own way. So like, I'm one of those people that like, you know, I can't necessarily pick out one like patron saint, or I mean, if I've gone into like a Hindu temple and there's little offerings at the different statues and stuff. It's like, I'll try to like leave as many offerings as I can, because I don't want any God to feel left out. I'm that person who's just like, you know what? Everybody's got a spot, you know, like everyone can come and play as long as you're nice. And so like, that's for me, I kind of feel like that about just, spiritual stuff in general, is to be open and welcoming, and then not necessarily value one particular thing over at the expense of another, just trying to do as many things as you feel compelled to do. We're not ever gonna know, you know, again, I'm not an expert about all these different faith traditions. I'm really not. I just try to value that that people throughout time have valued different traditions. And that faith is meaningful and has a precedent too. So I honor that, even if I don't necessarily have the background in it. So,
right. Understandable. Well, since you were tour guiding and you've been tour guiding for all these years, how has that influenced a lot of your fiction and nonfiction books?
That's a great question. So I really like to lead the reader through historic spaces, not in a way like I have to watch how many like historical tidbits I will put into the narrative, because you know, if you're reading a book that's essentially,
I love your historical tidbits though.
Bless you. But my editor is like, no, you only get like a couple on a page, you know, because I don't want it to read like, and on your left you will see, like that's not going to work in a narrative. So like, I one of the ways in which it's
you are
helpful,
a raider.
Oh,
legendary.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Somebody has come in with 48 people, so give me just a moment.
All right.
Everybody in
Charlotte, that's incredible.
What's up, Uncle Tim? How you doing? Y'all have caught me during a podcast. Awesome.
I love to talk to people.
We are interviewing Leanna Renee Heber. What's up, Crow? How are you? Hi, Titan Uranus. Titan Uranus, isn't that a great name?
It took me a second.
You know, it took me, like, I knew of them. I've watched them in another chat that I am in a lot, and I didn't really put it together until I called it out whenever they came to my channel. I went, fighting your... Wow. Okay.
Hilarious.
Monkey Poops, right. Yeah, Uncle Tim is Monkey Poops. So,
okay.
And he's rated with 48 viewers. Yeah. Ah, thank you for the follow, Jojo.
Thank you, everybody. I'm glad you're all here.
Right? Leanna was just telling us about her, how her tour guiding has influenced her books and her fiction and nonfiction books. And she is amazing. Y'all should go get her book that she's got out right now.
A Haunted History of Invisible Women, True Stories of America's Ghosts.
Yeah.
And how I like to invoke history in and sort of tour guide my readers as I'm writing, honestly, is to tell a good ghost story. That's usually actually how I do it, because especially since my characters in my fiction are mediums and psychics and are aware of the paranormal world, for them that's part of their normal world. They basically, you know, my characters talk about the ghost that's over there at that house that mm-hmm. they're seeing, that's maybe waving because they know that Eve can see them, or then, you know, one of my other characters is able to interact. So for me, because I make the paranormal part of the real world of my main characters, mm-hmm. that's usually how I can put in historical aspects of things that they're passing by, so that it becomes important in the narrative because it's an actual character interaction that they're having. And so I think that for, you know, for anyone who's interested in writing, a good writing tip is just like, the details are important, make them active somehow. The more active you can make them within the narrative, the less it's going to seem like it's me as a tour guide saying, and on your left, back in 1721, you know, so it's, which would sound like, which would jar you out of the narrative, because it would sound like it's, you know, it's a voiceover.
A typical tour guide.
Right. So I try to just be very like atmospheric of like, what would this feel like if we were walking in this time period, and just try to be as immersive as I can. Because I love the, you know, walking the paths that I walk. I usually will set my work along one of my tour routes so that I have like just so much familiarity, so that you, the reader, feel like it's as lived in as it is for me, because I walk this path so regularly. So I want that kind of sense of feeling like you're walking it too, that lived in capacity. It's why I really like to go visit places that I write about, because I want to have a sense of what the atmosphere around me feels like, what the ground beneath my feet feels like, how everything looks, the angle of light, the architecture, the just as many little details as possible. Do you get the smell of fresh water, or is it something where things feel stagnant? Any of these details, as much of the five senses and sixth in terms of how does the energy feel, as much of those things as I can put into places, because you do, like, if there's some of those historic spaces have a very ponderous spectral weight to them. And I like to have a sense of that too, and try to put that into the narrative, because then you, the reader, will feel, oh, this is an important place. This is a place that a great historic thing, good or bad, happened in. And you can feel either that weight of that, of something beautiful or something terrible that's happened. So I try to kind of include as much of that as possible on every sense and beyond, and hopefully then that makes you then feel like you're there.
Exactly. Oh, amazing. So how has this book, I mean, you said the book is being nominated for Bram Stoker, correct?
Yes,
that is awesome.
I've been horror adjacent in a lot of my work. My work technically is gaslamp fantasy. So it's, you know, Victorian set fantasy for most part. So there's horror elements, but it's not fully horror. So there really wasn't anything until this book that I could even try to get my editor to submit for the Stoker Awards. But actually I had people who had been aware of the book and sort of ended up making sure that it was on like a recommended reading list for the Horror Writers Association, which is an amazing organization. And you know, the concept of being nominated for an award named for a man who's such an influence and such an important figure, Bram Stoker's Dracula, is like one of the first 19th century books I read as a kid that was hugely influential to me. It's something I've gone back to time and again. When I was doing theater more regularly, professionally, I did several adaptations of Dracula that I was in. I would seek them out. I would try to audition for as many, you know, possible ways I could do that show to just like live in that story even more fully. So the concept of being nominated for superior achievement in nonfiction is literally an honor to be nominated. Absolutely. We won't know, we'll know the award ceremony happens middle of June. I wish I could be there in person, but I had already signed on as a guest of honor at a steampunk convention same weekend.
Yeah, I gotta go to the steampunk.
I can't make both of them happen. Like, they're in Pennsylvania. I'm in Ohio, but the distance doesn't. You know, I have required, as a guest of honor, I have required things I have to do at this convention, and it's one that I love to do. So I was like, I wish I could be in two places at once, but I can't. Yeah. So I'll be crossing my fingers and hoping for the best.
Exactly.
It'd be great to get a little castle, because their awards are little castles, and they're so.
Oh, that would be awesome right there on your shelf.
Yep. So these are my Prism Awards. These are very cool, and I would love if my Prism Awards. This is for excellence in fantasy and romance as a cross genre category, and it would be really neat if right at the center I could have a little castle.
Oh yes, that would be awesome. I'm crossing my fingers for you.
Yeah, so the book's done well, and we're in talks with Kensington about an additional book, and I'm not at liberty to say exactly how that's happening, but thumbs up, things are moving forward. That I can say, things are moving forward towards continuing to unpack narratives. We're just probably going to have a, rather than doing sort of a Haunted History Volume 2, Kensington didn't want to have another book that was going to immediately compete with the first book.
Right.
So, and you know, in nonfiction, you don't really go in series in the same way that you can kind of go in series fiction. So, and that was kind of a new thing for, oh yeah, I guess that's, they want the, you know, Haunted History of Invisible Women to be on the shelves for a long time. I think a few years down the road, we might be able to revisit and say, okay, now we can maybe try a volume two at this point. Mm-hmm. We want to let this have its time in the world, and then go back to revisiting that maybe a little bit later. But we're still going to be interested in unpacking spectral narratives, looking at them from all different angles. And so the way in which the kind of the overarching structure in which we do that, that's remains to be seen. But it is, you will hear announcements as soon as I am able to legally tell them.
Well, I have one more question for you, and then you can spout off where people can find you and find your books. We're going to go back to the Invisible Women book. What do you think is the most powerful thing about telling these stories of forgotten women?
That's a great question. So I think so much of women's history has been marginalized through history just because women have not always been able to be in positions of making laws or getting their names in records or owning property or, you know, being able to sort of tell their own story. It's been dictated for them in a lot of cases. So, you know, a lot of the stories that we're writing about are ways in which women were kind of trying to work within their constraints, historically speaking, but still doing it on their own terms and still doing it pretty fabulously. I mean, when I look at Eliza Jamel, who's, you know, who haunts the Morris Jamel Mansion in the last colonial mansion that's still extant in New York. And she just ruled over that house. She was making real estate investments in the early 19th century at a time when women were doing no such thing. And she was just like, I'm going to do a thing. I've got an aptitude for this. I'm going to make some deals. And she did. I mean, so it's not, you know, there were lots of ways in which women were trying to look at the constraints and the boxes they were painted into and what they could do and what they were expected to do and what professions they might be able to do, which was obviously very slim, but still managing to make their way. So for me, that's really, I think, an important thing to take with us, because we're always dealing with different constraints. Every single person is dealing with different kinds of constraints within society. So that's not that we can take that out of a gender equation, just say all of us are trying to navigate our place in the world one way or another.
Yep.
How can we do that in a way that honors ourselves and those around us and our loved ones as best we can, how can we try to be a positive versus a negative force in the world? And I think just lifting up these stories of just things you didn't know, or ways in which people were being ingenious, and also how the spirits of these women, sometimes that had very tragic lives, their spirits are actually playful and joyous in a way that they were not in life. And so I think that there's a certain way of like that kind of resilience of the human spirit. Mm-hmm. In the case of Kate Morgan, who haunts the Dell out in California in San Jose. So the Dell is like a 19th century resort hotel, and it's so beautiful and it's so interesting. And this woman, she took her life out on one of the side staircases, and it was a very sad and very mysterious story. And she was this national famed, the beautiful stranger was this, you know, took over the nation's newspapers for a while of who was this woman and why did she take her life. And turns out there was this whole other, like almost living a double life kind of thing. It's still not completely settled about who this woman was, but the Dell as a hotel has published a book about, you know, extant coroner records and the actual transcripts, that actual trial that those who found the body and you know, so it's all this actual court documents of what was happening at the time, which was very helpful to look into. And as a spirit, she hangs out and likes to like mess with people. She's a real prankster spirit, which is really interesting. So it's this, you know, the sad and ill woman has turned around into a specter that kind of likes that she's kind of famous in this particular capacity, and, you know, likes to yank sheets and mess with and ring phones and mess with the lights and mess, you know, and make yourself known. And I think that there's something lovely about a woman who had a rough life being able to be playful in the afterlife. I think that there's something to me kind of comforting about that. And I feel like it's a way to have a sort of second chance. And who doesn't like a second chance
story? Right.
So in a lot of cases, this is about a story of sort of second chances in an unexpected way. And that's, I hope people can just be inspired by it, can learn a few things, and also think about how their own existence with the world around them is a part of ongoing history that's been made to get you to this point, and what's going to be made in the future, and how do we talk about it, and how do we honor it.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. Tell people where they can find you.
You can find me anywhere. So literally, A Haunted History of Invisible Women is available wherever books are sold. And we mean this wherever. So like if there is a book website, you can type in A Haunted History of Invisible Women and it will come up. So now there is a book called Invisible Women that is about women in the workforce that is not this book. So make sure you put A Haunted History of Invisible Women and this book will come up. So in terms of social media, I have Facebook pages, but as Sean knows, I'm not on Facebook very much. So I have Facebook pages, but so I'll do those for updates and stuff. But I'm more on Instagram than anything else. So my full name, Leanna Renee Heber, is my Instagram handle. I'm still on Twitter, even though the future of that platform continues to be seemingly rocky. But I'm on Twitter because the publishing industry is very much on Twitter. So that is why I've cultivated. That's where I have the most followers. So I'm gonna try to still hang on there. So that's at Leanna Renee. So Instagram and Twitter are the places I am most. I still have a Tumblr. I really like Tumblr. That's fun. Some fun content on Tumblr. So that's my full name again. And of course my website. And my website has links to all the places where I am in terms of social media. My website has also a lot of like, it has some links to free reads, to writing advice, to other things. So my website, LeannaReneeHeber.com, has a bunch of different resources and links to things. It also has a page that tells you where to start with my books, because while I have tons of books out, And you don't have to have read one of my series to read another one of my series. You don't have to have read them in a specific order. The only thing I would recommend is read book one in each respective series first. So start with the first book in any series. So if you're looking at a Spectral City series book, start with the Spectral City, which is book one. So, my website has that pretty clearly delineated of like, hey, do you want like a Victorian Ghostbusters vibe? Or do you want a Victorian X-Files vibe? In this case, you want this or you want that one. And it'll show you where to find them. So,
and that
local
is
libraries are also good too. Support your local library, especially the Haunted History of Invisible Women. Libraries have been very, very supportive of the book, and libraries buy copies of books. So you're still supporting an author by requesting them from your local library, by checking them out from their local library. You know, they're our nation's great resources, and so don't hesitate to utilize them. And audio,
I love a beautiful library
too, as you mentioned the audio, yes. Which I'm so glad about. So that's available via Audible. And also I think that some libraries also do have an audiobook lending program too, so you can look at that. And if y'all have questions about stuff, there's a contact form on my website that goes right to my email. I am open for questions after I turn this next book in, and then I can field some questions. I love talking about these kinds of things. It's my life's work. It's why I'm on this planet. So I appreciate being here.
And I'm sure she will come back on another time, because this is not the first time she's been on my show.
It will not be the last.
Definitely not. Well, thank you so much. Oh, y'all too. She makes some beautiful like medals.
Oh, I have an Etsy shop too. So I do that thing too. So I have an Etsy. So my Etsy shop is called Torch and Arrow, and I would very much love if you all like little talismanic things. A lot of the things I talked about the things of like personal power and imagery and things that are meaningful. I kind of put that into the jewelry that I make too. I use vintage parts. I take some of the pieces apart, do new things with them, and try to create like little badges and things that are that have a little bit of meaning, of spirit to them. So
this is amazing, and I love it, and I wear it, and I carry it in my bag everywhere I go.
I carry it in
my bag because I don't want to get messed up. My bag gets thrown everywhere.
That means the world to me. So yes. Too. Thank you for that shout out, because it's like I forget all the places where I have things that relate to my business. But yes,
it's something to support you too.
That is a great way to support. And I'm very grateful, because the thing about publishing, I love working in publishing, but publishing pays very sporadically. So things like the Etsy shop really do kind of keep me afloat. I have the Etsy shop in lieu of a Patreon, because while I like the concept of a Patreon, I like fiddling with things more. And so that having a physical store that has stuff that I crafted is more in line with things I feel like I can keep up with.
Exactly.
Because the content required for a Patreon, I kind of need to put that content into just getting the next book done. So when I've hit a wall with looking at a computer screen and typing, I love being able to take pieces of 19th century jewelry pieces that need a little love and restoration and work with them.
Beautiful what you come up with. Well, thank you again for coming on.
This was so much fun.
It has been a blast.
Oh my gosh. Some of the best questions I've had I've been, on book tour for this since last fall. And so I've had a range of different things, but we've had some of the most in-depth and like truly spiritually meaningful questions here. So I want to thank your audience for that.
Thank you guys. And thank you. We'll talk again. Hold that thought. And you guys out there, if you're watching and you haven't followed, hit that follow button, because I have a guest or a true crime or a geek search every Sunday at 3 p.m. Central Time. And you can also go to a Muck Dash podcast on Kick or Twitch, and that is the middle America. I don't say middle America, like the middle part of USA, where we talk about events and everything with three other fantabulous investigators. So, and you guys need to go out there and follow Leanna on Instagram, because she's got some awesome pictures on Instagram of her Victorian style and her Gothic style, and it's amazing. So y'all need to go out there and
really
do that.
I would really love people to follow me on Instagram, because I came to Instagram late, and so like Twitter has a bunch of followers, but my Instagram is like struggling to catch up.
Yeah.
So yeah, I hope to see you all out there.
Well, thank you again. And you guys have a great day. Bye, y'all. And we're